The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
So let's review the sporting year. Marie Crowe, Tomás O'Leary and Paul Kimmage are with us, and we're going to talk about things until 7 o'clock this evening. I'm going to start though with the decision of the RT Sports Star of the Year, James McLean. What do you make of that, Paul Kimmage? He scored the winning goal against Wales and he's Sports Star of the Year.
Yeah, it's astonishing. Even by their standards, it's pretty astonishing.
He's a good guy, James McLean. I think everyone likes him. He's popular.
Everybody likes him. I love his commitment to the team. I love his commitment to the team. I love the way he plays for Ireland. It's absolutely, totally admirable.
Is it? I mean, he lost the head against Serbia. He was charging around the pitch like a headless chicken.
Well, look at the contribution he made. I mean, in fairness, his performance against Wales, his performance in every game, he gives 100%.
No, okay, we don't doubt that. You know, but there are times when you perhaps have to rein in the emotions.
And I've said that as well. You know, there's definitely times where he needs to stand back and be a bit clear-headed, But, you know, in terms of his overall contribution to the team, I think it's fantastic and it's great that you acknowledge that. But by no means is he a sports star of the year.
Marie, what do you think? Is he sports star of the year?
Well, I think when people are voting, it's a public vote. They're not sitting there analysing everyone's contribution. Like, people just are going on to this and they're seeing James McLean and they're remembering that goal and they're going, well, you know, he gave his everything for Ireland.
I've just put my hand down.
He gave his all for Ireland. Like, people can connect with that. Like, a lot of them, you know, you look at counties. Okay. People not from Galway, or, you know, they mightn't vote from Joe Canning. People not from Mayo mightn't vote for Andy Moore.
Do you think he's a good choice?
I probably wouldn't have voted for him if I was going to vote myself.
For?
I probably would have went for Andy Moore, maybe. But I can see why people voted for him. Like, it's a massive football country as well.
Are you much of a football fan?
Yeah, I watch it, but I wouldn't be a massive soccer fan. But yeah, look, I think the Sports of the Year should be based on achievement and success and winning a title or winning something or achieving something tangible. And I don't think he did that with the Irish soccer team. So certainly would have gone from, I probably, a bit of GA bias, probably gone to Rena Buckley or someone like that. She's...
Are you joking now?
18 All-Irelands.
Hold on a second, you're joking, really, seriously.
In terms of achievements, 18 All-Irelands... That's phenomenal. If she was a male counterpart, she'd have been lauded. You know,
where have you got these fellas?
Who would you have gone for, Paul?
Okay, so the problem, there's two problems with this RT Awards. Okay, the first is a public vote. Okay,
and what did the public know? Is it?
What did the public know? I'll go back to that old bugbear of mine, the book awards. So the book awards is bring all these great five books and public vote. Well, hold on a second. The chance of any member of the public reading all five books up for the award is zero. They're going to vote for the one they like, the guy they like. And it's the same with this. It's a public vote. It's a popularity contest.
But the
second problem, and this is actually a bigger problem, is the list itself. I mean, look at the list. It's PC glorified, politically correct glorified. Is there four Paralympians on it? I mean, for Christ's sake, come on. It's just a joke. No Paul Dunne, who wins a European Tour event, a sport that is massively, massively competitive. No grades. You've got to be a golfer. You're not a golfer. It's not lightweight golfer, heavyweight golfer. Wins the European Tour event, not on the list. Dan Martin, sixth in the Tour de France, not on the list. The list is a joke.
You could be here all day going through who could be put on it, but if you just look at your first point, which was the fact that it is a popularity contest and it's a public vote, what's the alternative? When it's the All-Stars and it's journalists picking it, everyone's giving out. When it's the GAA Player of the Year and it's the players picking it, everyone is giving out. So what's the alternative?
Well, the alternative, the one that I would suggest, is the one you've just highlighted there. A panel of, I'm not saying journalists, but a panel of experts who sit down and draw up the list and make a case then. Now, we could be the experts here. We'll draw up a list and make a case and we'll have a good fight about it. And at the end, we'll have agreed, we'll have a consensus view, we'll have measured all of the achievements. Popularity won't come into it. We'll have measured all of the achievement and come to a consensus as to who should be, who best represents what sports person of the year should be. That is the only way to do it. That's the fairest way to do it. And for sure, not everybody is going to agree with it, but we're absolutely sure nobody agrees other than James's parents, that he's the sports star of the year.
And all the people who voted for him. Though it did strike me, Tomás, that when I saw the shortlist, last year's winner wasn't on it. Last year's winner was Conor McGregor. Now, Conor McGregor has had one fight this year. He lost it, and it was a boxing match with Floyd Mayweather. But I'd nearly bet that if his name had been put on the list, he'd have won the award.
Yeah, probably, because it's a popularity vote, and to be fair to what he's achieved in his sport, well, MMA, and obviously he's gone into boxing, you look at what he's achieved and going into different weights and world champion in a couple of weights, and you look at his movement, his abilities as an athlete, he's second to none, and the work ethic he has shown to get to where he's got to, and the money and the revenue he's created for himself is very laudable. I know, I guess he's a... people love him, people hate him, but you have to admire what he's achieved as an athlete and even as a showman. So he's been linked with WWF, WWE, I don't know which one it is. He's been linked with a return to
boxing as Manny Pacquiao, possibly.
So, look, you have to tip your hat to him in terms of what he's achieved, but this year, in terms of sporting feats, he's fought against Mayweather and earned a lot of money for himself.
Yeah, so does that make him the sporting personality of the year, Marie, in the sense that we've probably spoken more about Conor McGregor than any other sportsman in the country this year?
Well, I think you have to have achieved something to go out on the list, and he didn't achieve anything this year. Last year, you could argue it, but I think this year, when we think of Conor McGregor, it's with negative connotations, like there's a lot of grimacing. You know, we do focus, the pictures that I have of Conor McGregor in my head when I think of him now are the pictures of him pulling up outside the courthouse, getting out of the sports car, as opposed to him fighting in the ring. And I think until maybe he gets back in the ring again and we start focusing on him as an athlete instead of what's happening out of the ring, then it's very hard to even see him as the sports person that he is right now.
Because you went to Las Vegas for the fight, Paul.
Yeah.
And what have you made of Conor McGregor subsequently?
Well, the point about McGregor is, I mean, he won the award last year, and you could make a case from winning the award last year, and because he just won a second UFC title, the lightweight title, where he beat Alvarez in New York, I think. So you could make a case for him winning it last year, and he decided he was going to take some time out. His son was born, and then of course there's all his rumours about this fight with Floyd Mayweather. Now, I was on holidays in August when that fight was taking place, and I actually came off my holidays because, you know, you could not ignore this. It had such hype, there was such momentum behind it, there was so much public interest in it. As a newspaper man, you had to be there, and I went there and I bought into it, and up until the moment where McGregor walked into the ring, I mean, I just thought the conviction he had walking out there, and this is, everybody is watching this. This is, so the point about the start of the year was, so we had two global superstars, Rory McIlroy and Conor McGregor. They were our two global superstars. But you look at what's happened since, and to get to your question finally, what's happened since is that he loses the fight. He loses more than the fight, I think, in the way he went down to McGregor, to Mayweather. I was disappointed that he ran out of steam so early, because the one thing he was boasting about was how fit he was going to be, and how this guy was eating cheeseburgers and wasn't taking it seriously. Well, as the fight developed, it was very obvious that after three rounds, McGregor was blown through his ass, and you expected more than that. But since then, you know, even at that, that's okay. He goes and he makes a lot of money, but he had a chance to be so much more than... He had a chance to be a great example. You go to the gyms now around Dublin, the UFC gyms or the mixed martial art gyms, and they're full of kids. And all these kids want to be Conor McGregor. And they're all looking up to him. And they see now the way he's conducted himself since. You know, the arrogance. And Fintan Toole wrote a great piece about this.
In the Irish Times last Tuesday. It's still in the Irish Times website as well, worth reading.
And that's really, that encapsulates it for me, is he could be so much more to where he's come from, to the community he's come from, to this community of mixed martial arts, who I've bought into that. I mean, I think it's a genuine sport. I think what they're doing is really, really interesting. But I think, in a sense, he's betrayed that with some of his antics since. And I'm not sure there's any way back for him now. I really don't. I'm not sure he'll ever fight again. I think someone really needs to get hold of him and get him to sit down and take a serious look at himself, because all of the good that he did up until he walked into that ring, well, even after, even when he walked out of the ring against McGregor, I think he's, or against Mayweather, I think he's
Larry, what do you think? Damage.
I think that if he does get back fighting again and focuses on that you can change perception. Like, you can, you know, if he parks that time. Like certain global superstars go through a bad time and they come back from it if they just put their best foot forward.
If he disciplines himself and his approach.
Absolutely. Like, you know, I don't want to be comparing him to Britney Spears, but Britney Spears 2008, you know, like Justin Bieber, these people go through these mad times and they come back around again when the right people are around them and they're focusing on what they're good at and they just get back on track and put the pictures of the ones that we want to see. We want to see Conor McGregor in the ring or in the octagon after winning a fight with the Ireland flag on him. We don't want to see him outside the court in his sports car. We don't want that anymore. We want
or
to see the athlete.
Or running into somebody else's fight and attacking the referee.
Yeah. Yeah, he did so much for mixed martial arts. It was a sport we didn't know very much about, that we were very sceptical about because of the violence of it. He managed, I think, to draw a huge audience and to do a huge service to MMA. And he can do that again if he goes back into the ring and focuses on that. But it's a big ask for him now because it hurts.
Okay, let's move on a little bit rather than just staying with him all the time. Who won the sports team of the year in the RTÉ Awards?
The equestrian team.
Hang on now. If it's a how many people actually voted? They can't be that popular.
I think they got 40% of the vote.
How could they have done better than the Dublin football team when it comes to a vote? The Dublin football team that has won the 3 in a row, which is one of the most outstanding Gaelic football teams that any of us could ever imagine.
I think
seeing.
They only got 5% of the vote. But as far as I know, there was a very good campaign by the show jumpers to win this. And look at the publicity that they got from it. Just for example, if they decided to text all their members to vote for them,
Marie,
they've got a lot of publicity
you're
after
supposed
it.
To be defending this.
I'm just trying to find a reason why this happened.
Are you on the RT payroll now? Be honest. Pop up here.
I just think that it's it probably was a good move for them to orchestrate a campaign because they've won the team of the year and they've got a load of publicity from it.
Okay, but the team of the year has to be Dublin to us.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. The achievement of going 3 in a row. You know, getting over the line in the Ireland final, but you know the style
against an incredibly brave Mayo performance
that they still play in the modern game where it's gone ultra defensive. They kind of have a great set of forwards and obviously very able backs too. I think it would have been probably apt to give it to Dublin. I think Jim Gavin obviously has done a great job. He's obviously much more maligned by the media because he doesn't give away much. He's
he's a bit Declan Kidney like, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, I guess. But you see the respect and the admiration, and the players that obviously do whatever for him. So that speaks volumes, maybe.
He's also ruthless when you see the turnover of players that has taken place since 2011.
Absolutely. Look, even on, you know, leaving Connolly on the bench, leaving Bernard Brogan on the bench. That speaks volumes of, I suppose, his intellect as a GAA manager. And those players didn't throw the toys out of the pram publicly.
He needed them in the second half against Mayo, though.
True, yeah, but he was able to spring them from the bench. So I think it kind of speaks volumes. The playing group, you know, you can sense that they love playing for him and that they respect him, they almost fear him, and all great coaches are like that.
Again, though, it's a popularity contest. It's people voting in.
Is this things that people outside of Dublin don't love this Gaelic football team, that they might admire and respect them, but they don't love them?
The question is now, do the people in Dublin love them because they didn't vote for them? You know, like, there's all these questions about are they being snubbed, but they had a chance to vote for them and they didn't vote for them.
Look at Croke Park, any there.
Well, it's an interesting point Marie makes about they didn't vote. I was just looking at the Spotty Award, the British BBC Award last night.
Oh, we're going to get to that in a minute, yeah.
But did you guys vote? I never vote in those things. I love sports. So
but you can't criticise if you didn't vote for them.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, I do think that they're being treated...
Of course you can criticise, because it's just a nonsense, Marie. You know what I mean? What do you mean you can't criticise? Of course you can criticise.
But I mean, Dublin
nonsense.
People can't
say... This is a nonsense.
But Dublin people can't say that the Dublin football team were snubbed if none of them voted for them.
But you shouldn't have to vote. Like,
no. It's a popularity contest.
So that's
the premise is that you vote. And but I do think they are treated unfairly because they are a great team.
We'll get to Mo Farah after the break. But
wasn't about Mo Farah at the point. It was about the Pop Bell.
The Dublin football team, because I suppose you might have been a little bit not in love with them as well, but have you changed the mind with time now since the All-Ireland final?
No, that's totally wrong, Mark. I absolutely have absolute admiration for. I would have voted for them as the team of the year. I could make a very good case for Stephen Cluxon as sports star of the year. I think Conor Callaghan runaway
when you see across the range of club matches, intercounty football and hurling,
runaway winner of young star, whatever. But you can make a case for him as sports star. No, absolutely, would have no problem with any of that. They've been outstanding. The manager's an outstanding manager. They didn't behave particularly well at the end of the All-Ireland. I had an issue with that, but look, that's it.
And Paul, I go back to you because, well, we have James McLean. At least we don't have to have Mo Farah as our Sports Star of the Year. The BBC, there they are. They had Froome, hadn't they, on the list.
Yeah.
He couldn't get it after what happened with the asthma inhaler last week.
Yeah.
And then Mo Farah gets it. Of course, Mo Farah hasn't done anything wrong that we know of, has he? Apart from missing a couple of tests before the third test.
I saw someone tweeting there this afternoon that Carlos the Jackal has a more credible passport than Mo Farah, referring to his some of his associations that he should have shed long ago if he wanted to be... if he wanted us to have some faith in him. It's a mystery. That, I mean, we... As bad as the Irish one was, last night's was a mystery. And the point I was going to make, Marie, about the popularity vote. You look at the list last night. Like Harry Kane, 18,000 votes. Harry Kane got. Now, what about the sports fans?
But look at the size of the British market. That's like getting 180 votes here in Ireland.
It is. It is absolutely. So that's a curious thing. You would have thought, oh, well, all the football fans that go for Harry Kane or the sports fans are 18,000. I don't know how it works. It's a very, very curious system.
But maybe BBC don't show that much football.
That's what I think as well. I think a lot of it has to do with...
Yeah, but everybody follows football.
But the fact is they're championing Mo Farah so much. Like Gabby Logan before this, she did an interview with the Radio Times, "What's your moment?" It was Mo Farah. Like they're... pushing Mo Farah all the time. Like if it was a Sky Sports personality of the year, I think Harry Kane would have won it. You know, I think a lot of it does have to do with what channel it's on.
With these idiot presenters they put up.
But who the viewers are as well, like.
Just interesting. Farah's interesting because in 2012 he did the double, the 5,000, 10,000 double at the Olympics. And he only polled fourth that year, 131,000 votes.
Who was ahead of him?
Bradley Wiggins won. He'd 492,000. Jessica Ennis second and Andy Murray third. So only polled fourth after winning a double gold at the Olympic Games in London, right? And then you look 4 years down the line where he does the double-double, wins it again, the 10 and 5 in Rio. And he's fourth again. And this time he's only got 54,000 votes. So if he couldn't win it, you know, in 2012 and he couldn't win it in 2016, how on earth does he come out and win it this year? I mean, some of the guys on the... I'd never heard of Jonathan Ray. Johnny Peacock, because, yeah, he was on Strictly that I happened to watch with my mother the other night. That's the only reason I knew who he was. And I don't mean to be disparaging about them, but it's very, very odd list.
I think it's a very BBC list, though.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Joshua and Lewis Hamilton at least have a bit of credibility with world titles. Are,
but if it was Sky Sports, Joshua would have won it.
Yeah.
Because he's their guy, you know? I really do think that they push an awful lot of the agenda, and their viewers are probably, and the voters are the people that watch it all the time.
Actually, let's come back to Ireland and Galway winning the hurling, because it was a really enjoyable hurling year, wasn't it, Marie?
Yeah, it was. And there was just so many good stories coming out of it. And the interesting thing about the hurling championship, I know it probably sound like a bit of a hurling snob, is that, you know, it's always wide open and there were
good games. The Gaelic football, in fairness, only came alive at the semi-final stage. There were one or two reasonably good games, but it really took off at the semi-final stage. Well, those Tyrone people would say it didn't, but the Mayo Kerry semi-final did. But the hurling was great from back in
Munster
hurling championship was fantastic.
Cork came out of nowhere. You know, Kilkenny were gone. Tipperary expected great things from, and it didn't happen as much. You know, you had the whole Brian Cody thing, you had Davy Fitz in Wexford. You just had so many different stories and narratives and angles and things to keep you interested in it. And then you had the icing on the cake when a different winner...
Great final.
Great final, good team, good characters, nice story, like lovely pictures afterwards. It just all fell into place for just a lovely flow and a lovely...
And I suppose it was a unique final as well. Galway, 28 years since they last won it. Waterford, God knows when at this stage, because going back, it's nearly like the Mayo footballers for Mayo or for Waterford winning. And it was always going to be sort of one great story out of the final.
Yeah, exactly. Either way, it was going to be a fairy tale for whichever county. I think Galway were definitely the strongest team all year, and you see that.
Should they won everything?
Yeah, exactly. League and championship. And I think they only got stronger this year. And I think Waterford, they got a terrible start and they nicked the goal to stay in the game. So I do think they need to embrace a more attacking style of hurling. And I think they had...
Well, they got the goals against Cork in the semi-final, but that was largely down to the sending off.
They had enough of a threat up forward. So, look, that's something they need to address next year. But I think Galway will be very, very hard to beat again this year. Look, physically they're very, very impressive, and you know, a lot of great stickmen too, you know.
And Joe Canning finally winning his All-Ireland, it would have been an awful shame to see him go through his career without winning one.
Yeah, it's interesting, he says it wouldn't have defined him, but obviously there's a
massive... Is that true?
I do, yeah. Look, I think
he can probably, say it now.
He can say, well, exactly, he can say it now. He spoke about his brothers not winning one and hurling for whatever 12, 13 years with Galway. Look, from my own personal experience as a sports person, look, it's easy to say now because I luckily to have a bit of success with Munster and Ireland. But like the things you look back on aren't the medals. Or you know, it's the crack and the times you had, the good times you had. And I think in team sports, it's the journey, but obviously the more successful the journey you have, the better crack you'll have. So I don't know whether
you won a Grand Slam with Ireland, you won Heineken Cups with Munster, so clearly that's going to say it was a great career.
True. Irrespective of, I suppose, if Galway hadn't won All-Ireland though, Joe Canning's still going to be a great hurler, one of the greatest. I suppose success,
but he'd be on one of those lists, you know, greatest hurler never to win an All-Ireland.
Yeah.
You know,
and who wants to be on that list?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, look, it's definitely, I suppose, definitely puts the icing on the cake, and I suppose he can hurl now with the shackles off. And he said himself that, you know, because he burst onto the scene as a 18 or 19 year old and scored whatever 2, 3, 4 or whatever, he said that he almost felt the expectation that he should be delivering that every day for Galway, and when he didn't, he felt the pressure of the fans, the pressure of the media, even his teammates. So it's interesting to see how he's matured.
It's great that he does it though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really great that he does it. I love that. Really do. You know, someone who's had to carry that for so long, had that monkey in his back for so long, and then he actually goes out and does
it.
But
that is an interesting point, that maybe he'll be liberated now, that he won't feel that same pressure in the future. We could see even a better Joe Canning.
I absolutely agree. I couldn't agree more.
Next year will be interesting, and Micheál Donoghue has said that, you know, they do have a target on their back. They're going to be a very different team this year going into it. But I listened to an interview with him recently, and he very much sounds like Jim Gavin with the way he says things and his approach and, you know, the mindset and building from the bottom up. And he seems to be the right man to take them forward now. So this season, I think, is going to be really interesting just to see if they can do it again and you know, who's going to be in the chasing pack and who's going to mount the biggest challenge, and if Waterford are going to do it again. And I think, you know, a lot of people would like to see them
Tipperary
back.
Tipperary are not the team they used to be, Kilkenny or not, Cork, they have a long way to go. I think Galway, you know, all the sound bites come out of there are very, very positive, very self-assured.
But it's all so difficult to retain an All-Ireland as Tipperary.
A couple of weeks after it, Donoghue said that they were planning, like they were putting things in place for the next season. It was like, right, that's done. When are we back training? They're back training. You know, it's now looking ahead.
Okay, text message from Jack Corry. For the information of Mr. Kimmage, Jonathan Ray comes from Ballyclare, County Antrim, and became the first rider ever to win 3 World Superbike Championships.
Yeah.
So he got the Northern Irish vote.
Well, that is unfair of me to be as disparaging as I was of him, because clearly that's a huge sport, and you can't but have admiration for those guys, because what they do is phenomenal. I mean, the margins,
bravery
there, oh, incredible.
Is it on BBC?
Absolutely incredible.
Probably is. Okay, I want to go back to the Irish football team, because we were talking about James McLean. Again, small margins. Well, I suppose 5-1 in the end wasn't a small margin at the Aviva the night we got beaten in the second leg by Denmark in the World Cup qualifier. But isn't it amazing that if we had come through that, Marie, Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane would have been heroes for guiding the Irish team through to World Cup finals next year.
Yeah.
And now everybody's talking about, is Martin O'Neill the right man to be leading the Irish team?
Yeah, and James McLean, we wouldn't be arguing probably about this as much. I'm kind of conflicted about it, because in a way, you know, when you look, you know, they were fourth seed in the group and they came out of it and they got to a playoff and they went to the Euros, and you know, there was an awful lot of achieved. The performances probably didn't set anyone's world alight, but you know, they did get to a place where we weren't expecting them to get to at a stage. And then when we got to a playoff, you know, we were raging that we weren't beating Denmark in the second leg. So I'm kind of conflicted about it. He doesn't endear himself to people. He's quite prickly. You know, he's hard to warm to.
Is he a tactical dinosaur in the age of modern football?
There's a lot of questions about that, but like, you have to look at who we have as well, like the players that we have, and you know, like, is that the best way to play, to set up defensively? When they didn't do it the second leg, you saw what happened.
But could it be international football now really is second class when it comes to football football?
No, totally wrong.
Really?
Yeah.
Go on, explain why you don't think
so.
In terms of the quality,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
In terms of what it means to us,
yes.
The Ireland-Denmark playoff was the game of the season.
Yeah.
Was the game of the season. It was absolute. The buzz for the first 25 minutes of that game, the build-up to it was incredible. Everybody, absolutely everybody was on board with the team. And I just felt it was cruel for them to lose in the way. If they'd got done 3-0 away in the first leg, I think that would have been easier for them. But to come home here, to be 55 minutes away from a World Cup final and to get turned over the way they were turned over, they didn't deserve that. That was, sport is cruel. It's a cruel business. And when it happens in your backyard like that, with what's happened before, that the intensity of that build-up and how excited everybody was, I just felt they didn't deserve that. With regard to Martin O'Neill, you know, Gary Breen gave a fantastic interview in the aftermath of the game where he pointed out some real problems the team had and some things he didn't understand about how the team had set up and how the team had played. And for as an intelligent a man as Martin O'Neill, the thing that really always I just don't understand about him is the Tony O'Donoghue interviews. He's always snapping at Tony, who's asking reasonable questions. And you kind of think, well, if Martin doesn't have, for a man who's so intelligent, if he can't actually listen to Tony's questions, to understand that what he's asking is reasonable, to listen to what Gary Breen is saying and to understand that that's reasonable, and to come out and say, okay, I've listened to all this, bang, 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 here's my response. You don't get that from him. So when you make the point about being a dinosaur in his thinking to the game, I get that. That's a valid point. But you would hope, he has more than that.
But there's a contrast to Moss between himself and Joe Schmidt as manager of the Irish rugby team, because, or coach of the Irish rugby team, because Martin O'Neill seems to make this whole thing about, he doesn't tell the players till 90 minutes beforehand who's actually playing. He sort of does limited coaching of the players who come into him, by all accounts. And yet, by contrast, Joe Schmidt, everything is detailed down to the last moment.
Yeah, it's a strange one. And obviously, Gary Breen has had his, you know, he's heard Kevin Kilbane and Damien Duff, these guys who played at the top level in the Premier League as well. And, you know, even the top players crave a bit of direction, crave a bit of structure. And then with it comes to defending set piece, attacking set piece, formation and soccer. Obviously, I'm no soccer expert. And as you said, when you contrast that with Joe Schmidt, he's almost a control freak and demands the players know their roles within the structure. And obviously, he provides and gives the players freedom to express themselves too within that. But I know that a lot of the players crave the structure and they love the structure because
If you're at the top level, you're a top professional player, you actually need to be told what to do.
I think so. Well, the rugby lads anyway, I know from the lads coming back into Munster camp, coming from Ireland camp, I was never coached by Joe Schmidt, but they said the amount of minute detail, even when it comes to cleaning out a ruck, or even when it comes to fighting on the ground after you're tackled, is crazy. And I suppose the expectation that he has on every one of the panel of players is phenomenal. But when they come back from it, you know, and maybe it's a bit more relaxed in Munster, or they almost want to drag up the standards, want to crave, or want to demand more detail, demand more analysis. Like, so certainly in rugby sphere, they want more guidance.
You know, this strikes me as the interesting transformation in Irish sport over the last decade or so. And this applies with rugby, and I think with Gaelic football and hurling, sports where the players stay domestic. The attention to detail and professionalism is absolutely extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And I wonder about sometimes players who play in other sports abroad, whether they actually have the same coaching or same attitude when they come back to playing for Ireland.
Well, one thing is that you'd imagine it's very unsettling to not know what's going to be happening, you know, 90 minutes before
kickoff.
Are you playing or not? And then you find out you're playing and you're like, right, what am I supposed to be doing? What, you know, was I listening to this? Was I listening to that? Does he have confidence in me? Has he just picked me 5 minutes ago? Like, all those things start coming into play as well.
Well, I think the the thing about Martin is he grew up and learned his trade under Brian Clough, who was very much a Frank Sinatra, I'll do it my way. Martin is, and you get a strain of that when he's talking to Tony. You know, you're challenging my position in the game. You're challenging what I've done. You know, so he's always done it his way. He's always done it a certain way. It's always brought him results, but you know, maybe he needs to change.
Also, we maybe have a different attitude towards sports in this country, because I know even Graeme Souness would say, and he said it here recently, that when he came over to Ireland, he discovered he could do punditry in a different way to the way he can do it on Sky, because he doesn't have to worry about the access. Those of you getting in touch to say the BBC doesn't cover the world's superbikes, that Eurosport does. What BBC does cover is the Isle of Man TT. Let's talk a little bit more about rugby, Tomás, because at the start of the year there was an awful lot of doom and gloom around about how the Irish clubs couldn't compete in Europe because of the budgets that the English and the French have. And yet we've seen the last two weekends in particular, the Irish teams are dominant in European competition. So how has that come about?
Look, last year's semi-finals, like Leinster, were just narrowly beaten by Clermont with a good performance that they were very disappointed in, that they lost. Munster were well beaten by Saracens in the semi-final, right? But I think that was probably down to a very negative game plan, which was almost to restrict, I suppose, Saracens from playing. So, like, obviously, I'm lucky to have played in the Premiership in England and obviously the top 14 in France too, and I suppose having gone from Munster, where, as we spoke just there, you know, teams are very well prepared in terms of analysis. Players are very, very professional, far more professional than I experienced in the UK or France. And there's a genuine investment and affiliation with your province, with your team. It's you're representing your people in your parish, in your county, in your province. And that can't be underestimated. Like, it went from being a passion and a sport I loved to being a job when I went to the UK and France. And like, you can't put a value on that. And look, all the speculation about
Peter. There is a lot of value because Peter O'Mahony is staying. We still wonder about CJ Stander at Munster.
Yeah.
Tyke Furlong is remaining with Leinster, but Simon Zeebo is going.
Yeah, well, look, people are always going to leave for different reasons, and whether it's financial, whether it's life experience. Like myself, I had probably stopped enjoying my rugby through injury, through form. I had thankfully I'd won a couple of Heineken Cups and a Grand Slam already, so I felt there was nothing left for me to achieve in Munster. I wanted to experience something different. Went to live in London, loved it. The rugby was pretty crap, but I got to, I suppose, develop myself in terms of business, in terms of socially, live away from home. Came back to Munster. Obviously, new coach came in, didn't fancy me too much, so ended up going to France and had a ball in the south of France for 6 months and stayed there for another 4 or 5 after. Loved this in terms of life.
That sounds like a lifestyle move.
Yeah,
right.
It was. But in terms of, obviously, Zeebo, we spoke about his move. He's obviously going to a top club as well in terms of Racing Metro. They have a heavy foreign influence there. Obviously, well-coached team, one of the more professional teams in France. He's obviously getting well looked after financially.
Maybe a couple of years there and he goes back to Munster afterwards.
Yeah, well, I don't think there was any ever fear that Peter O'Mahony was going to go. He's captain. Munster have lost a couple of coaches over the last couple of years. So I don't think there's going to be a mass exodus, but I think top players like Conor Murray will go to France in the future.
Okay, well, the IRFU had not a great year off the pitch, I think it'd be fair to say, Marie, because missing out on the bid for the World Cup 2023, and also the way that they dealt with the Irish women's rugby team this year, I think left an awful lot of people dissatisfied.
Yeah, I don't think they covered themselves in glory with the whole thing. It was a great tournament in terms of the logistics. I mean, it went off perfectly.
This is the Women's Rugby World Cup.
The Women's Rugby World Cup, logistically wise, you can't fault it at all. But afterwards then we heard about the lack of support that the team got in terms of preparation, in terms of coaching, just in terms of support. And they had to stand up and air some of these grievances afterwards, which wasn't an easy thing to do. But what I wonder about the whole thing is, if they had stood up beforehand, I know that they were thinking about it, if they'd stood up to
sort of Saipan-like.
Like the women's football team, because if you look where they
yes.
are now, like they drew with Netherlands, like it could have been so much better, it could have been different, because like they didn't have to go out and win the Women's Rugby World Cup for it to be a success, but they did have to perform well, and they didn't, and you could see that there was troubles. Everybody knew that there was troubles, and there's no legacy now because of it.
I have, in the time that's left, I want to talk about Rory McIlroy, who I know you're a big fan of, Paul, but he's now number 10 in the world. Now, is this a danger that he's throwing away the fantastic talent that he has?
No,
too young.
Definitely not. It's not a voluntary thing by any means. I mean, this time last year, I was very fortunate to get an interview with him, a really fantastic interview. He went away to South Africa, played in his first tournament, the South African Open, looked like he was going to romp that, and he got a rib cage injury, ended up losing in the playoff, didn't play again until March, came back, finished seventh at the Masters, got married, was full of enthusiasm, to kick on at the 57 in the Masters, and he did the rib cage again, injured himself again, and that effectively ended his season. He came back too soon at the US Open, wasn't practicing, missed a cut at the Irish Open, missed a cut at the Scottish Open, and then had this absolutely extraordinary mini meltdown at the British Open, where he's gone out in the fourth round, he bogeys, he's six over after five holes, and he has his caddy, JP Fitzgerald, standing with him on the 17th, saying, you know, you're Rory McIlroy, what the F are you doing? I mean, you think of someone like Rory and the talent that he has, for him to, you know, to have to be told that by a caddy, to be five over.
But was it the caddy's fault? Because he ended up firing the caddy afterwards.
Well, he did, but I think you know, he finished seventh, I think. Was it seventh in the Open in the end?
Yeah, but he had a tendency, I think, last year.
No, tied fourth.
He was coming late, but he was never in contention to win any of them.
Yeah, but your initial question was, is he going to throw this away?
You think this is injury, simply?
Absolutely. And he addressed that at the end of the year. He said, well, that's it. I'm going to get myself right for next year. I believe he will have, and he will need to have for himself, he'll need to have a big year next year. But he is going to come out all guns blazing, and I think it'll be really something to look forward to, something I'm really looking forward to. I mean, this time last year we sat in here and we talked about things you're most looking forward to, or your one wish for the year. My one wish for the year was Rory to win the Masters. That would still be next year.
Is that your wish for 2018?
Yeah, he would join this elite club.
In a minute we have, what's your wish for next year?
I'm really looking forward to the Super 8s. I hope that it delivers some great football matches, good competition, that we're not waiting till the semi-finals for the GAA Football Championship to get going. That,
yeah, I just wish they still had kept the calendar where it was.
A little bit further back, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's worth trying out, see what happens.
Lots of people are going to miss matches because of holidays.
I'm like that fella.
More dedicated.
I'm like that fella on the bus. I don't know what the Super 8s is.
Oh my God, Paul, you realise your credibility is going to be shot down.
I'm just telling you, I'm just being honest, okay? Someone's got to explain
to us. What are you looking forward to most in about 20 seconds?
See how the European Championship develops. Be great to see.
Munster could win it.
Munster final, I think Leinster have a massive chance, but Munster would be a tough team to beat in the knockout stages. So European final, Munster, Pippin, Leinster to the post would be nice to see.
We can only dream of that. Tomás O'Leary, Marie Crowe and Paul Kimmich, thank you all very much for being with us here on The Last Word in Today FM this evening, and we look forward again to talking to you at length many times over the next year about sporting issues.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.